All right, morning, everyone. We're starting a brand new series called How to Properly Wash Your Hands. So you're going to really enjoy this. It's going to be great. But no, seriously, we're glad to have you guys out. If you're visiting with us, first of all, kudos for coming out on this really balmy day in January. Glad to have you guys. I will say up front that if you're here this morning, there's probably two types of people. There are those that are somewhat disappointed, and then there are those who are blissfully unaware. Let me explain. If you had an opportunity to go up on the hill on the last two Friday nights at the Christmas Eve service or the New Year's Eve service, then I'll have to admit, being here this morning is somewhat disappointing, all right? For those of you who could not make it because you had obligations, family obligations, other things, I know there were some basketball games, that stuff, right now you're blissfully unaware. You have no idea, right? I mean, how many of you were up there? I mean, am I kidding? I mean, was it like cool to be up there? Yeah. You know, I have to admit, I mean, you guys even couldn't even get into applauding because there's a little bit, I mean, I have to admit, when I came in today, I was a little bit down. Now, we love Williamsburg High School. They've been great to us. But even me, I mean, up there at the new place, I mean, when I was preaching, I could almost like, body surf? I could have jumped out on top of you. But here we got a moat. And you guys seem so far away. But I really, the worship up there was incredible. I mean, we had a full band. There were 11 people, plus when you bring Andrew Ball up, that was 12. Some of you are like, no, there was 10. No, there was 11. Bill Giglio, who was up here today, he was hiding behind the manger over there in the dark. So if you were there and did not see Bill, go up and tell him he did a great job, because he was there, but he was hiding off the side. But even with the full band, one of the things that I noticed, and they were rocking, is the congregational singing was like off the charts. You could hear it above the band. And I mean, they didn't go like a cappella or anything. It was awesome. I mean, it was a goosebump moment. Another thing that was really interesting about up there is we had to start our service 10 minutes late because someone came up and said, there's like a whole line of cars heading up the hill and they're still coming. And this was one of the real unique things about the Christmas Eve service is that over 3/4 of the crowd was there 30 minutes early. This crowd. These people here. You know, some of you who haven't even arrived yet because you'll be coming in the next 5 minutes, 30 minutes early. So you all have it in you. I know because I saw it happen. But it was incredible. You guys came early and everything. One other thing I will say that if you missed the New Year's Eve service, you missed a classic crossing moment that may never be repeated again. Ken Hudson brought the word on New Year's Eve, but that's not the part that will not be repeated again, because we'll probably roll him out again. But he preached a full sermon in under 22 minutes. 22 minutes. To put that in perspective, I usually am not even out of my introduction in 22 minutes. So this is unbelievable. Hud did a great job. But something that happened after the New Year's Eve service that many of you were unaware of if you were up there is we got to end the year or kick off the new building in a really cool way. And that is we got to see a couple sisters, Cheryl Wainscott, Lori Tackett, they're out here. They were baptized in the new baptistry up on the hill. So ladies, congratulations. I think the picture's up here of them. There it is, taking the plunge. What was cool is it was warm, it was nice, and it wasn't in a Tractor Supply feeding trough, which is what many of you have been baptized in since you've been here. But it was really a cool, cool way of really capping off the end of the year, and man, it's just a preview of what's to come. I don't know if you know it, but if we get there on time, which we're shooting for Easter, because that's when they're shooting to be in their new building, then that's 14 Sundays. We have 14 more Sundays where this church will finally be able to be moved off of the portable church registry and to where we finally can stop wandering around like a band of people that wander around. So, 14 more Sundays of being portable church. Anyway, enough on that. Today we begin a brand new series, not about washing your hands, but about actually a deep down cleansing of the soul. And our whole idea is we live in a world that, to be quite honest, is messy. You could say that our world we live in is contaminated or very unclean. This is the time of year when probably all of you, you know, 8 days ago made these great resolutions of, you know what, I'm going to get my life in order this year. I'm going to do a deep cleaning. I'm going to get things organized. I'm going to get things structured. We're going to clean out the garage or the closet or whatever. There are others that decided this is the year you're going to get healthy. And so maybe you've already done some of those health detoxes or those deep cleanses. Maybe you've decided to do a social media cleanse where you're trying to get rid of some of your friends, or maybe you're just saying, you know what, I'm not going to do social media for a while. It's just a time of year when we are thinking about being more clean or more organized or structured. Now, I turned 50 last October, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this, but I did one of those surgical procedures that they want men that turn 50 to go over, and I'm not going to give you too much information, I promise. But I had to do this cleanse in order to be able to do this procedure. Now, there was a lady that does attend this church that happened to be in the actual preparation room because she worked for the GI doctor that I was seeing. And so when I'm getting ready, she comes in with this sign that she says she's going to put on the front of this pulpit the very next week that said, I know my preacher inside and out. Fortunately for me, Brandon preached that next week, so it wasn't up there. But she didn't go. She wasn't in my room. She said she was assigned to another patient. At least that's what I think, because I was in that Twilight Zone stuff, you know. I call it awesome sauce because it's really, woo, anyway. But enough on that. Some of you get what I'm talking about here, all right? Let's get away from the medical side of things. Let's just talk about, remember when you were a kid and your parents said, I want you to clean the room, and I mean, you better clean it good, and you've got so much time to do it, or else you're not going out to play. Or you're not. I don't know about you, but here's how I cleaned it. I tried to get as much under the bed as possible, as much crammed in the closet as possible, and as much stuffed in the drawers as possible. And then my idea of dusting wasn't to get in dust and a rag. It was to take my hand and run it across the stretch, you know, and just shove it onto the floor. Am I the only one that ever thought that was a way of doing some cleaning? If I could just get it out of sight, off the floor, so you can walk around, then it is clean, right? Anybody try that? All right, confession time. Well, here's the thing. As I was thinking about this series, the reality is I think that for those of us who would consider ourselves to be a Christ follower or Christian, you know, I think we do that with our spiritual lives as well. We think we're getting ourselves clean when what we're really doing is just shoving stuff under the bed, into the closet, stuffing it in the drawers, and just kind of moving it around or compartmentalizing it. And I'm just going to take my stuff and I'm just going to move it over here for a while. And now I'm clean. I'm good. I'm feeling good. And I think that's what we do, is we think that if we could move things out of sight, then we're going to be better off. So over the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about doing a deep cleaning of our soul and some other things that kind of get messy. So if you're someone who deals with anxiety, depression, feeling overwhelmed, you're going to want to be here next week because we're going to talk about that. If you're someone who is haunted, dogged by your past has consumed you, your past has even caused you to go a certain path because you think that you're done, then we're going to talk about that. So if the past is something you struggle with, you're going to want to be here in a couple weeks. And then we're going to wrap it up by really cleaning out our lives by getting rid of the idols that we have in our lives. And I'm, you know, we've got a few, all right? So over the next few weeks, I really want you to come, and we're going to do some deep soul cleansing. But that's the first part. The first part today is we really need to talk about the soul. Deep soul care, soul cleansing. I saw this quote the other day from a book I'm reading called Emotional Healthy Spirituality. And this is what it said. Someone confessed that I've been a Christian for 22 years, but instead of being a 22-year-old Christian, I've been a 1-year-old Christian 22 times. I've been a believer for 3 decades, but instead of really being a 3-decade-old spiritually mature follower of Christ, I really feel like I'm a 1-year-old 30 times. Does that resonate with any of you? Because that got into me. And why is that? Why is it that we could say that we are a follower of Christ, but when it comes to our spiritual maturity, the reality is it feels like we're just doing it all over again? Well, I think a big reason is because we take our stuff and we just try to shove it out of sight, under the bed, in the closets, in the drawers, And then we just run our hand across it. We think, okay, I'm good. And then we wonder why the very next year or the next month or the next season of our life, we're doing it all over again. And I think that's a common story for so many of us. And I think it's because we do superficial cleaning. We don't go deep. Let me tell you a few things about our soul. First of all, Genesis chapter 2. We go back to the beginning in Genesis, the beginning. What we see in chapter 2, verse 7, is in the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils and the breath of life, and the man became a living soul. You know, it's interesting that a lot of times I think that we think that we are a body and all that, but here's the reality. We are not a body that just so happens to have a soul. We are a soul that just so happens to have a body. Chew on that a little bit. But the reality is we are a soul that just so happens to be encapsulated into a body. And that's the first thing we have to realize is when we're talking about cleansing our soul, protecting our soul, we're talking about that which God gave us, which he breathed life and we became a living soul. The second thing is, in Genesis 4, 10 through 12, is not long into the Bible, you hear about these two brothers, one's name Abel, the other's name Cain, and you realize that in the whole wide world, those two guys couldn't get along. And so Cain basically is jealous of his brother, and so he kills him. And God says in chapter 4 of Genesis, verse 10, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are cursed and banished from the ground, which has swallowed your brother's blood. No longer will the ground yield good crops for you, no matter how hard you work. From now on, you will be a homeless wanderer of the earth." Because of the sin, because of what's going on, you will now be a wandering, homeless wanderer. The Holman Christian Standard Version calls it this. It says, you will be a restless wanderer. You see, it didn't just happen to Cain. But because of our sin, we are constantly, restlessly wandering. That is the curse that we are dealing with. And so from this moment on, he was going to be a restless wanderer. And deep down inside, we have all been restlessly wandering and searching ever since. You see, the restless soul is always searching, but have you ever noticed, we never really find it. We're never finding. The soul is interested in everything, but seems to be satisfied in nothing. Fernando Pessoa said this, "My soul is impatient with itself, as with a bothersome child. Its restlessness keeps growing, and it's forever the same. Everything interests me, but nothing seems to hold me." Anyone here ever heard of restless leg syndrome? Now, if you know somebody has it, don't point them out, because you'll probably violate a HIPAA law or something like that. But if you know of anybody that struggles with restless leg syndrome, it is a neurological disorder, and basically their legs tend to move a lot. And a lot of it is because of throbbing and pain and creeping and all kinds of unpleasant sensations. And I noticed that in doing research that about 10% of adults in the United States have restless leg syndrome, where their leg is constantly moving for one reason or another. Well, here's the thing. 10% have that. 100% of us have restless soul syndrome. We all struggle. We all have restless soul syndrome. We're always striving for something. We're always reaching for something else. We're always going. We're always doing. We're never satisfied. Our souls are always longing for the next season. I bet you there's somebody here that has said, "I'm so ready for spring. I am so done with this already. I am so ready for spring." See, we're already looking to the next season. Some of us are looking to the next job, the next career path, the next promotion, the next responsibilities. Some of us are looking on to the next house, the next vehicle. Some of you are looking on to the next grade in school. I mean, when I get to be an eighth grader, like, that'll rule. And then I want to be a freshman. Then I want to be, like, 12th grade because I'll be the king of the school. And we're always looking forward to the next grade, the next level. We're always looking forward to that next vacation. And it's usually before the last one ends. On the way home, we're already thinking, we're already planning, when are we going to do the next one? Where are we going to go? We never seem to be satisfied. There's another thing called FMO. Anybody ever heard of that? FMO. It stands for this, fear of missing out. Many of us have that issue, FMO. That's why we won't make a commitment to her or to him. Because if I do, what if I miss Mr. Perfect? What if I miss my soulmate? There might be somebody that's better that comes available. It's the reason we don't commit to things. Because if I commit now to something that's going to happen in a few months, well, what if something better comes along? Well, what if I miss out on that? I mean, I'd like to get committed, but if I get committed, I might miss this. We have this fear of missing out. I can tell you right now, there's a lot of parents and a lot of the teenagers, and a lot of them came back in to watch this video, that this is happening the first week of July, that there will be a lot of kids that will not go all in on this until somewhere around the last week of June. Why? Who else is going to be there? Who else is going? Well, that's still a long way away. Something else better might come along. It's called the fear of missing out. Well, that's what leads to the next thing. The reality of missing out. Do you realize how much we miss out on because of the fear of missing out? Because we're too afraid to make a commitment? I'm going to challenge you parents. You know, we hear the sad stories all the time about kids these days. If you want to make a difference, if you want to set them up to have a life-changing, eternal consequence kind of decision, then I would find a way to get your kid over to the table to meet Dustin Weeks and sign them up to a week like this where they're going to learn about Christ, where they're going to serve others, where they're going to be serving the needy. They're going to Nashville. I hear Tim McGraw and Carrie Underwood are going to be there. No, that's like false Facebook news kind of stuff. That's not true. But fear of missing out. You will pay for a lot of other things. Don't let them miss it. But that's what we do. We have this fear of missing out. And so we're restless. We're constantly restless. We're aimlessly wandering. We're always looking for the next big thing that is going to fulfill me. And even when we're doing nothing on the outside, we have the inability to shut down on the inside mentally. And Solomon says this in Ecclesiastes 2:22-3. He says this, so what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? What do people get in this life for all that? And then he says, their days of labor are filled with pain and grief, and even at night, their minds cannot rest. Our minds, we just cannot rest. And so we know that our body needs physical rest. We know that we should get a good amount of sleep even though we don't. But what do we do with our restless soul? What do we do about that? How do we get down to that soul? Well, I believe the starting point really begins in this, and that is that our rest, our true rest, the end of wandering, the end of our restlessness is found in one thing and one thing alone, and that is in God. Period. Psalm 62, David says this, for God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. Basically, what it's saying is, in he alone, period. Because he is the one that brings salvation, hope, life. And it's in him and him alone. But we're always looking for rest. We're always looking for peace of mind, for restfulness. This past week at the New Year's Eve service, I was talking to Tim and Jennifer Schenkel, and one of the things that they had all their kids home together, all their young adult children are there, and they're all gathered, and two of them are in the military. And one of the things that you can see on their faces, and I can relate, and many of you can relate, is they said, man, it's nothing like having them all home under the same roof. I mean, you talk about a restful night's sleep. You talk about feeling some real rest. And then she quickly segued, as we do, but that's getting ready to end because in the next few days, they're all going to start heading out. And what she said and what I know and what many of you who have parents where you're now empty nesters know is it is so sweet when they're all home under one roof. But that restfulness has an expiration date on it. It is temporary. We'd love to just bar the doors and keep them locked in the whole time, but that ain't going to happen. And what we find is the things that we feel peace and rest in, it is fleeting. We cannot put it in a bottle like we'd like to. We would love to. Because our period of rest, it always comes to an end. Now, for those of you who have small kids, you're thinking restfulness in kids, that's got to be a myth. I mean, that's a mystery to me. Because if you have small children, you don't get restfulness right now. And you want to get them out of the house. Right? Let's be honest. But we're always searching. We're always trying to capture it. We're just trying to, lightning in a bottle, let's hang on to this because it makes me feel like I could finally rest. But what David says is, it is in God alone my soul waits in silence, and from him comes my salvation. So how do I find rest? He says it, in God alone. Not in my kids, not in my financial portfolio, not in my next upcoming vacation, not in my job, whether I have one or I don't, not even in the relationships in my family. It is in God alone, who is my salvation. And so if we're restless and we're wandering, that is the curse. The curse is the sin that has put a division between us, and we are longing for him. St. Augustine said it, you've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our soul is restless until it finds rest in you. In other words, there's no other person, no other experience, no other amount of money, no dream home, nothing on the outside, nothing outside of God will bring you the rest for your restless, wandering, and weary soul. God and God alone. Look what Jesus says about it in Matthew chapter 11, and I love it. I love it, the Eugene Peterson version. He says it this way. Are you tired? You worn out? You burned out on religion? Now, those that are burned out on religion, many of them aren't here today. That's why they're not here, and that's why they're not in a lot of other churches, because they're burned out on religion. Well, Jesus talks about that, because he answers the question. So if you're tired, if you're worn out, if you're burned out on this religion, then here's the answer. Then come to me. Me. Not all that stuff. Come to me. Get away with me. And then you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythm of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you will learn to live freely and lightly. If you want rest, if you want your soul to rest, it is in God alone. And what Jesus is saying is, it is hanging out with me. Come with me. Work with me. Walk with me. Trust me. And so it's in him. So let me just close by giving you a couple things of what we need to do, practical things in how we can find deeper rest in our soul. The first one is, we need to be still before God. Many of you know the next passage I'm going to read because you've seen it on a coffee mug or a t-shirt. Psalm 46, verse 10, be still and know that I am God. Anyone have small children that do not sit still? It is not fun, is it? It is exhausting. Some of you are like, small children that don't sit still. I have a spouse that won't sit still. Anybody have one of those? I do. I married one. Where I want to sit still, she doesn't want to sit still. She is constantly going, constantly moving. The only time that she sits still is when she's asleep, and even then her leg moves a little bit. Or when she's sick, and there's a third time. The only other time that she is still is when she gives me that look. She's giving it to me right now, by the way, back there. We were doing a stare down just then, and she, again, won. But be still. We think, when we think of being still, that's what we think about is be quiet, shh, don't move, do the mannequin challenge. Don't do anything. Be still. But there's two parts to this verse. The first one is be still. And the Hebrew meaning of be still isn't just shh. The Hebrew meaning is stop striving. Stop struggling. Stop working so hard. Stop trying to figure everything out. Stop trying to have the answer, control all the situations. Just stop. I don't know about you, but it is hard for me to be still. It is hard. I struggle. When I feel like things are out of control, I like to control things. And one of the things is, and anybody that's real close to me knows this, is I can never take the moment to celebrate the experience or to check it off as a moment of joy. Instead, I'm already rushing ahead and thinking of the other 10 things that could go wrong and what do we need to do if these things happen. And I'm constantly overanalyzing and worrying about stuff. I have a difficult time because I just want to control it. I want to fix it. And when I do that, here's the thing I notice, is that I can look for refuge in the wrong places. All of a sudden, I think that what's going to bring me peace or restfulness is in my control of the situation. When I figure it out, then I'll finally get some rest. I mean, I got to think this through. And so I start looking at that. I start looking at it, relationships. I try to find my own solutions to my restlessness. But being still is to chill out. Let God. Let him do it. He's got this. And we find it so hard to be quiet in a noisy world, a world that's filled with noise and sound and competing voices. Most of us are plugged in 24/7. Who here has to have the TV on at home, whether you're watching it or not? Who here has the radio on when you're working, whether you're listening to it or not? Who here, let's get really personal, has to actually have a sound machine, a fan, a box fan, or something called white noise going on in the room so they can sleep? Who has to have a white noise or a fan? Yep, there was like 2/3 in the first service. Well, I got a suggestion for you on that one, all right? When it comes to white noise, go home, download the Crossing app, and then open up a sermon. Kenny White sermon, and listen to it. It's called Kenny White Noise, and I guarantee you that you will be gone in 10 minutes. Matter of fact, it's so effective. Look around. There are a few of you that have already tagged, you know, you're out. Here's the point. There is a serious point to that. We have to have constant noise. There's constant voices, constant talking, constant, bah, 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 going on and on. And some of those voices are our friends. Some of them are our family. Some of them are our teachers. Some of them are our mentors. Some of them are voices that are critics, the critical voice. Now, you talk about the voice that keeps on giving, and that is a critical voice. And some of us, we think that's a spiritual gift because we've got it down. I can tell you right now, thinking back when I was thinking about the critical voices in my life, I can think back 30 years ago about what someone said to me that has bothered me so much that I'm still affected by it today. And I bet you can too. Where someone has said something about you or said, well, have you ever thought about this? Or you should do this, or you should do that, or you don't do this. And they're critical. It sticks with us. And it just comes out of nowhere sometimes. And it could bounce around in our head. And speaking of critics, there's one other voice that we listen to a lot, and that is your voice, the one in your head, the one that you're constantly having a dialogue with all the time. I saw a study where there are 50,000 thoughts that go through this head every single day. 50,000. Doesn't that just make your head hurt thinking about it? Some of you are already going to start counting and keeping track over the next 15 minutes. But 50,000 voices. And what are our thoughts? I cannot believe I messed up again. I'm such an idiot. You are such an idiot. Hypocrite, fraud, fake, stupid, jerk. I can't do that. That's impossible. That's too hard. He could do that. She could do that. But I can't do that. There's no way. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm too fat. I'm too ugly. I can never preach for under 22 minutes. Do you know how much that's bothered me in the last 8 days? I could never do that. And then there's the voices of doubt, the voices of fear, the voices of anxiety, worries, stress. And here's the question. 50,000 of those thoughts going through your head all the time, which voice or voices carries the most weight with you? Which one do you give the most credibility? Because the answer to that question is very critical when it comes to finding real rest. Because there's only one voice that we're going to listen to that's going to give us true rest. And that is the voice of God. And that's the second part of Psalm 46, verse 10, is know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Here's the thing that I bet you found out. The people you know the best are the ones you spend the most time with. If you don't spend time with these people, you don't know them. That's why a lot of times in all my church history, I've heard a lot of people come and say, I just feel like this church doesn't, I don't know anybody, or it just feels cold, doesn't connect. Almost every time, they're not in a community group, they're not serving anywhere, they're not doing anything other than coming in, sitting down, and spending an hour and 15 minutes or however long in a service where we're singing, we're listening, and then we leave. And we wonder why we don't get to know the people that we're worshiping with. You see, the people that we spend time with are the people we tend to know the most. And when it comes to God, be still and know that I am God. You aren't going to know him unless you spend time in his word and with him. It's no wonder why he feels like a stranger to me. And it's not on him, because he's not moved. It's in us. And when you get to truly know God, then you can truly be still in the sense of the way it's meant to be, and that is stop striving. Stop working so hard. Stop trying to control everything. You see, because when you get to truly know God, then you can be still in the way that it was meant to be. For example, like I said, you know that verse. You've seen it on the posters. You've seen it on the t-shirts. Be still and know that I'm God. If you take that verse and that verse alone, just in that context, here's what you're probably going to say. And I don't know whose voice it is that you're going to hear it say it, but would you sit down and shut your mouth and listen up, because I'm in charge. I call the shots. So sit down, shut your mouth, and be quiet, because I'm God. Now, I don't know how you hear that. I don't know if that's a coach's voice, your wife's voice, your mom's voice, somebody's voice is saying that to you, but it's completely out of context. If that's all I read, that's what I'm hearing. It's, you know what, just be quiet and just know that he's God. But if you actually get to know him and read the whole chapter of 46, not just the verse that's on the coffee mug, what you will see here is that it says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and the mountains come and crumble into the sea. Verse 5, God dwells in that city. It cannot be destroyed. From the very break of day, God will protect it. Verse 7, the Lord of heaven's armies is here as well. They're among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Come and see all the glorious work the Lord has done. Then it gets to verse 10. So be still and know that I am God. And then it finishes up with, the Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. And in case you missed it, let me repeat myself. Of the God of Israel is our fortress. You see, when you read the entire, when you get to know God, you realize it's not a cliche statement on a coffee mug or a t-shirt that says, shut up, I'm in charge here. What it means is, relax, chill. Do you realize how protected you are in my presence? Do you realize what I can do? I am your refuge. I am your strength. In me, when all the world is falling apart around you, stop ceasing, cease to strive, stop trying to work it all out and figure it all out in your head. I will protect. My whole armies are here. So he's saying, relax, I got this. Now, which way do you like seeing it? Shut up, I'm God, or man, I'm so powerful, I'm so mighty, I have everything you need. Relax. You see, there is a difference when you get to know him. Jesus did the same thing when the disciples were going across the sea and the wind and the waves kicked up and he's asleep down on a pillow. He knows he's in control. He knows he's got nothing to worry about. But his disciples, the professional fishermen, didn't. So in Mark 4, they go down, they wake up like, Jesus, Jesus, help us. Don't you care? And he goes up and he says, peace, be still. Interesting. Be still. And then the disciples are like, dude, who is this guy? That the wind and the waves obey him. And then he looks at them and as if to say, where's your faith? Don't you know who you're traveling with here? It's the same thing as Psalm 46:10 all over again. Peace, be still. I got this. And when we know God, then we can find that rest in this restless soul of ours. 50,000 voices or thoughts every day. If God isn't the primary one, you will not ever find rest. Because it is in He and He alone that my soul rests, because He is my salvation. The last thing, real quickly, that we need to do, and we don't do this enough either, is to reflect on His goodness. You know, Bob Goff says this, we can either keep track of the good things we've done, or we can keep track of the good things He's done. You know, I spend a lot of time worrying about all this stuff I got to do. And when I do that, I'm all stressed and worried. And if I would just spend more time thinking about all the great things He has done, I might spend a lot less time worrying about all the things I have to do. If we reflect on His goodness, you see, we're so tempted to want to take control and think it and overanalyze it, and we have to realize He is there. Psalm 116 says this, let my soul be at rest again. Let my soul find rest again, for the Lord has been good to me. You see, He's reflecting on His goodness. Let me relax and trust Him. He has saved me from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling, and so I walk in the Lord's presence as I live here on earth. You see what He's doing? He's recalling the good things that He has done. He has saved me from death. He's got this. Reflect on what He's done, on His goodness, on His grace, on His answered prayers, and reflect on how He's changed lives. You know, when we reflect on Him, you know, a lot of times we worry about tomorrow, but we need to be still and stop worrying about tomorrow, because He's already there. He's the I Am, the great I Am, as we started out. He's the great I Am. So here's the thing. Our enemy's going to make us busy. He's not going to try to make you bad. He's going to make us busy so that the voice of God is drowned out by all the other voices. And as long as He does that, we will continue to wander restlessly and never find rest. If your soul is weary this morning and you're trying to find rest, I want to tell you, and it sounds too simple to be true, but it is in God. And some of you know that because of another passage of Scripture that you've seen on coffee mugs and t-shirts and posters. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He restores my soul. And He is the only one alone who will bring restoration to yours. So the question is, do you listen to that voice? Are you paying attention and following, coming to me, those who are weary and tired and burnt out on religion? It's about a relationship, not a religion. Come to me. Don't come to the church. Don't come to that group or that. Come to me. And I will give you rest. So I'm going to just challenge you right now, as you guys have had perfect attendance, at least at the Crossing this year, because this is our first time. So congratulations. But I want to challenge you. I do not believe you're here by an accident. When it is like the Antarctica out there, there was a good likelihood that we didn't think anybody would show up. But you're here. You are. And I don't believe it's a coincidence. I believe it is a God incident. And so what I'm going to do is we're just going to have a time of prayer. The band's going to come out and lead us in a couple songs. But I'm going to ask you to be honest with God, because you know what? You may not feel like you know him too well, but he knows you completely. So be honest with him. And get bare in front of him and just ask for help to dial into his voice, to tune into his voice. And when he prompts you to open up his word, do it. When he instills in you this thought to, you know, I need to just talk to God right now, then do it. And so I'm just going to pray, and I'm going to ask you to pray with me. And there's not a fancy formula to it. It's just being honest with God. It's just coming to him. You don't have to come to him through me. You don't have to come to him through anybody. Jesus took care of that. When the veil was torn, it's you and him. So come to him and just spend some time praying. And if you want to pray more and with people, there'll be people here that will be happy to pray with you. If you want to talk more about this this Jesus that can bring you what it is that you're looking for, then come down front. There'll be people down front that'll be happy to talk with you about that as well. Let me pray. God, I just thank you so much. I thank you so much for your son. He is the one that can calm the winds and the waves. He is the one that we are searching for. He is life. He is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. It's only through him that we will find the full life, the full joy, the full hope, and the truest, purest sense of the word love that we will ever find. So God, may we look down deep and stop moving stuff around and compartmentalizing stuff. But God, would we truly stuff the junk? Would we just get rid of it? Stop listening to all the lies and all the voices, all the deception, whether it be voices around us or the ones in our head, so that the voice that is the loudest, the voice that we surrender to, is yours. So God, I just pray that as we all stand here before you, that we will respond in whatever that response is to your cry out and to your call, and that we would surrender to you. God, we wander, and it's you that will put all that wandering to an end. We love you.